Te Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. That's funny. it's misprinted here. It says Chapter 1 at the top of the page. Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, text number 34. The word meanings, Bhavayati maintains Asha, all these, Sattvena, in the mode of goodness, Lokan, all over the universe, Vai, generally, Loka Bhavana, the master of all the universes, Lila, pastimes, Avatar, incarnation, Anuratha, assuming the role, Deva, the demigods, Tiryak, lower animals, Nara, Adishu, in the midst of human beings. Bhavayatyesha sattvena.
Bhavayatyesha sattvena.
We're going to get up there. Okay. Bhavayat yesha sattvena. Lokan vai loka bhavana. Lila vatara anurato. Deva tiryan naradishu. Bhavayat yesha sattvena. Lokan vai loka bhavana. Lila vatara anurato. Deva tiryan naradishu. Bhavayat yesha sattvena. Lokan vai loka bhavana. Lila vatara anurato. Deva tiryan naradishu.
Yeah. translation. Thus, the Lord of the universe maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals, assuming the roles of incarnations. He performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are innumerable material universes, and in each and every universe there are innumerable planets inhabited by different grades of living entities in different modes of nature. The Lord, Vishnu, incarnates in each and every one of them, and in each and every type of living society. He manifests his transcendental pastimes along, he manifests his transcendental pastimes amongst them just to create the desire to go back to Godhead. The Lord does not change his original transcendental position, but he appears to be differently manifest according to the particular time, circumstances, and society. Sometimes he incarnates himself or empowers a suitable living being to act for him. But in either case, the purpose is the same. The Lord wants the suffering living entity, the suffering living being, to go back home, back to Godhead. The happiness which the living beings are hankering for is not to be found within any corner of the innumerable universes and material planets. Maybe I'll read that sentence again. The happiness which the living beings are hankering for is not to be found within any corner of the innumerable universes and material planets. The eternal happiness which living beings wants is attainable in the kingdom of God, but the forgetful living beings under the influence of the material modes have no information of the kingdom of God. The Lord, therefore, comes to propagate the message of the kingdom of God, either personally as an incarnation or through his bona fide representative as the good Son of God. Such incarnations, or sons of God, are not making propaganda for going back to Godhead only within the human society. Their work is going on in all types of societies, amongst the demigods and in those other than the human beings. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnana Anjanasa Lakaya Chaksum Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jayatam Sarito Pangor Amamanda Mater Gati Matsarga Sva Padambo Jo Radha Madana Mohano. So in this verse, this is the last verse of chapter 2, and it's kind of like making the transition where next chapter is Krishna the source of all incarnations. So we're going to see how this verse here leads into the next chapter, maybe tomorrow and from then on. And this in this verse, there's a couple points that stand out that are a little bit being introduced. It's a new concept that the Lord, he takes on incarnations amongst the different species, not just in the human species, and in all the societies. And Prabhupada points out here that we don't have that information, so we have to hear about this information. And the specific motive for that is to make one out of compassion. The living entities in this world are bewildered and suffering. And most everyone now has experience of that. And it gets taken advantage of by the advertising world. But here, Krishna, we're getting through Parampara the actual information. There's a nice verse that points out some of these same ideas. This is from Canto 10, Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods, verse 29, where the translation is, O Lord, you are always in full knowledge, and to bring all good fortune to living beings, you appear in different incarnations, all of them transcendental to the material creation. When you appear in these incarnations, you are pleasing to the pious and religious devotees, but for the non-devotees, you are the annihilator. And in the purport, this is 10.2, Prabhupada's purport, he said, this verse explains why the Supreme Person of Godhead appears as an incarnation again and again. Remember the Bhagavad Gita verse they're going to quote? Okay. The incarnations of the Supreme Person of Godhead all function differently, but their main purpose is paritranaya sarunam uskutam. Thank you. To protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants. And it says, even though the Duskritins, the miscreants, are annihilated, this is ultimately good for them. So that was a nice verse that's pointing this out, that he appears, and the difference between when Krishna appears as an incarnation or avatar, he descends, he doesn't get influenced by the material energy. So in Krishna consciousness, right from the very beginning, ABC of Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing practically in the conversation with Arjuna is giving reasons, and they're from the modes of nature, from the material condition of life. And Krishna right away starts off with, never there was a time that you did not exist. So that never, that's the platform Krishna always talks on, is this Brahma-Bhuta platform. And he says, you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So how is that lamentation comes up again in 1854 about the wise? It points out the wise. So the wise points is they're established in absolute consciousness, and they neither hanker nor lament. They see all living entities separate from the karmic activities that they're undergoing. And because of that, they have this compassion. This is the nature of a devotee. He feels compassion for everyone that's in the bodily conception of life, and he wants to bring them back to home, back to Godhead, in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And there was a nice verse that I came across. It's a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's talking about this Brahma-Bhuta stage, because this is the stage that Krishna consciousness is begins. Madhbhaktim lavate param. So this is Krishna consciousness is executed on this Brahma-Bhuta stage, and that's the happiness that we feel. There, Brahma-Bhuta, prasanatma, this prasanatma, this joyfulness, is whenever one's in Krishna conscious, he's happy. He's not hankering, he's not lamenting, he's seeing all living entities free from their bodily designations, and he has a compassion to have them all come back home, back to Godhead. And we see the same thing all through the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains how to act for the pleasure of Krishna and feel that natural happiness that the soul has when he's not acting in the bodily conception of life. So in this verse here, this was from Madhya 8:139, it's a long purport. I'm just going to read the part that's relevant to our discussion. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur considers the Brahma-Bhuta stage in two divisions, Sarupgata and Vastugata. One who has understood Krishna in truth, but is still maintaining some material connection, is known to be situated in his Sarup, his original consciousness. When that original consciousness is completely spiritual, it is called Krishna consciousness. One lives in such consciousness is already living in Vrindavan. He may live everywhere. Material location doesn't matter. When, by the grace of Krishna, one is thus advances, he becomes completely uncontaminated by the material body and mind. At that time, factually, he lives in Vrindavan. That state is called a Vastugata. So, well, the next paragraph sounds relevant. One should execute his spiritual activities in the Sarupgata stage of consciousness. And then it mentions some okay, I wasn't sure how to place this, but I was also considering, because it's the last verse of the chapter, to do a quick summary of the chapters, since we're only in the second chapter, how the Bhagavatam begins. And this next paragraph will be the transition to go to that. It says, one should execute spiritual activities in the Sarupgata stage of consciousness. He should also chant the Chinmaya Gayatri, the spiritual mantra. Mantras, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya and Kim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Janabala Swaha. So these are Kama Gayatris, and one should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and worship Krishna with these transcendental mantras. So specifically, it mentions Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we know that the Bhagavad Gita, it pretty much ends with the instructions Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakanchati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. And then the next verse is, 1855. Who knows 1855? Come on. I just get numbers. All right, everybody will get it. I'll give a running start. Bhakti Mama Bijananti. Okay, now most people know by that. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Person of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me, by such devotion, he can enter the kingdom of God. So, every day we sing Samsara Dava Analita Loka, that we're, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're becoming free from birth, death, disease, and old age. At least not we forget that. This is no little thing. We've been in this material world cycling from one body to another body since time immemorial, going through millions of species of life. This human form of life is Durlabha Manasa Janma. It's very rare to obtain, but by some good fortune, Guru Krishna Prasade, you get this Brahmanda Bhumi Te Kona Bhagyavana. You get some the good fortune by Krishna and Guru to get this information by which one can solve all the problems of life and get a full taste of that nectar for which he's always anxious. We see that was in today's purport too, that this happiness that we're hankering for. So everybody's looking for that. That's the motivation for fruitive activities, the inspiration. Impetus for fruitive activities is the idea that we'll become happy. Nobody goes to a drugstore and says, give me some disease. They all go there to try to become free from this. So this human form of life, even though it's very rare, durlabha, manasa janma, it's very valuable. So in this, there's so much information to be learned, but in Bhagavad Gita, here's a verse that gives one hope, and then I'll read the two verses after that to how it includes us. It says, verse 13, 24, one who understands this philosophy. So what's the philosophy to see? What is this darshan, that the vision that one sees? What is that? In 328, it says, atapavit mahabaho. What's he see? He sees a distinction. When you turn the light on, you can see something that you couldn't see in the darkness. So what is it that he sees? He sees a distinction between what this material nature is and what the spiritual nature is. Just like the last class I gave, it was on 1221, thus the knot in the heart is pierced, all misgivings are cut to pieces. So something like when you cook peanuts, when you take them out of the oven, they still continue to cook, so you have to take them out a little early. So even after I gave the class, the next week or two, I kept still getting understandings from the verse. And a lot of times I think in humor. So like when it says, thus the knot in the heart is pierced, it translated into colloquial terms that burst your bubble. That's a colloquial way of saying that you had this idea, but your bubble was burst. And of course the idea was that we're the enjoyer of this world. Sorry to disappoint you, but we're not the enjoyers of the world. We're the servants of Krishna, and then we can enjoy everything by engaging in Krishna's service. And then when it says all misgivings are cut to pieces, thinking philosophically, there's Sankhya philosophy, which means you thought you're this body, but that's a misgiving, that you think you're this body, you think you're the enjoyer. So what did Sankhya philosophy do with your body, this yantra? They called it a machine, and then they gave you the parts that it's made up of. It's mostly dirt, got some water, fire, you're actually 98.6, the electricity and all the calories, earth, water, fire. So here's all your misgivings are cut to pieces. So now when you can see that, just like this verse that I was partially reading, all your misgivings are cut to pieces, then the chain of fruitive activities is terminated, and one sees him, he sees himself and he sees Krishna, the master. He can see that what is matter, what is spirit, and the controller of both. He understands his independence can either be, because we're the marginal potency, we can either be controlled by the material energy, which we become bewildered and frustrated. What would be some other ways of saying what happens? Oh, sometimes you think you're happy, only to be disappointed in the future. Because it says here that you can't find happiness. Abrahmana bhuvana loka. From the highest planet, because people are thinking if the grass is greener on the other side, advertising. So I'm going to read text 24 again, because I think I didn't finish it. It says, one who understands this philosophy, that's right, darshan, philosophy, concerning material nature and the living entity and the interaction of the modes of nature is sure to obtain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. So that's encouraging to me when it says, regardless of your present position, if you just understand what's this philosophy, you won't take birth again, regardless of what situation we're in. Because generally, most of us who are practicing Krishna consciousness, the devotees could say, I'm in Maya. But of course, as soon as they say Maya, they're referring to Krishna's Maya. And our sadhana means always remember Krishna. So even when one's in Maya, he's thinking, I'm in Krishna's Maya, I'm in Krishna's external energy. He's remembering Krishna by the context. But it also comes with a type of longing to be free from that. So then, two verses later from there, just in case we're not so conversant with the philosophy, Krishna gives us this state. He says, and again there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. So now that sounds like a good thing to do, to hear. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So what is the path of birth and death? That's called fruit of activities, the bodily conception of life. I am the enjoyer, this world is. It could work, I just need to make a couple adjustments. But it's pointed out that they become entangled in her complexities, that it's not something that you can touch and not have an effect. When you touch the material energy, something like electricity, you may voluntarily touch the electricity, but once you touch the electricity, it has an effect on you that you can't let go of it. And there's other things like that. Glue boards, how to catch a rodent. They put this very sticky stuff on a board, and an unsuspecting rodent, he's usually going after the peanut butter or the almond. He touches it with one of his feet, and his foot stuck to it. So with his limited resources of understanding, he thinks, how can I get my foot out of this? You know what he does? He puts his other foot in to push it out, to push the first foot out. But you know what happened? Now he's got 2 feet stuck. So we know how that ends. So this material energy, it's got the peanut or the almond or the peanut butter, the tasty element, the taste of sense gratification is there, so we touch it unsuspectingly. But now we're stuck. So we think, I can make a plan. I got a plan how I can avoid this difficulty. Maya Sakaya, Prahlad Maharaj, says that he feels sorry for these. It's pitiable, because their plan is to put their other foot in to pull the first one out. And then they just get more and more implicated in there. So here we're learning that Krishna comes again and again. So I was thinking of going through a little review. Oh, there's that one other verse I was going to say. Is 4:9. 4:9, anybody know the numbers? 4:9 is?
John McCormick.
Yeah, John McCormick. That anybody who knows, is that 4:9? Is that, yeah, 4:9. And anybody who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, he doesn't take birth again. So one of the nice byproducts, that one 535, the byproduct of knowing Krishna is that you get knowledge of what's actually going on. Krishna wants us back home. He wants us. We're always being missed. He comes again and again. He actually feels some discomfort. Actually, Prabhupada used the word pain, because we're not there in the spiritual world, and he knows that we're suffering. Just like I noticed one time when one of my children was very young, he was still sleeping in the same bed as his mother, he was having a bad dream. You know how kids look when they're having a bad dream. You can tell they're sleeping, but they're experiencing a bad dream. So when my wife looked over, what does she feel when she sees the little child having a bad dream? What's a mother feel? Come on, what do mothers feel?
Wake them up.
So that same feeling, where does that come from? The guru has that feeling that everybody in this material world is sleeping on the witch of Maya. Jeev Jago, wake up, sleeping souls. How long will you sleep? And we're experiencing, Prabhupada would give the example of, in a dream, there's a tiger that's chasing you. And that would be scary. That would be really scary. And people, we do have dreams, and especially sometimes in devotees, it says that you're freed from your karma. But because there's still some necessity, that either you get it as a token or you can get it as a dream. And that way, it's you experience it, but you don't experience it. And in that bad dream, the mother wants to wake up the child. But that feeling comes out of love. I don't want to see anyone suffer. So Krishna comes again and again. And here, I was going to do a little review on how we got to this part of the Bhagavatam. So we know that there's an introduction, a definition of an introduction. I looked it up in the dictionary. An essay or article or book has an introduction, and then it's got this really long English word, is the beginning section which states the purpose, the goals of the following writing. The introduction typically describes the scope of the doctrine and gives a brief explanation or summary of the doctrine. So when we read the first verse of the Bhagavatam, here we go. The first verse, you can kind of see how the whole, this is an introduction. It, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It says, O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth, the primeval cause of all causes of creation, substance, and destruction of the manifest universes. So already we're getting a statement, a clarification that there's a material world, there's a spiritual world, Krishna's in control. We know from the nutshell verses, Aham Eva Sa Eva Gray, he was there before the creation because someone has to have the elements to create it. And we're offering obeisances, so now we're giving up the false ego in order to recognize our constitutional position, subordinate to Krishna, and more about Krishna. He's directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. He's independent because there's no other cause beyond him. So that's an interesting statement, that there's a cause for this creation. There's a reason for this creation. And when Sanatan Goswami was talking to Lord Chaitanya, he says, if I don't know why I'm suffering, then he says, kene, hita hoy, how can I be benefited? I'm a little slow on that. I try to remember mine. But unless we know why we're suffering, unless we know what the purpose of the creation is, how can we be benefited? What's worse than suffering without knowing why you're suffering? So as soon as one knows, understands why he's suffering, then it's beneficial. One can actually see it, just like a small child. Sometimes he may be chastised by the parent and he gets upset. Why are you doing this? But later on, his intelligence grows a little bit more and he says, thank you so much. You've protected me by giving me this reaction. In fact, there was the story of the small child whose parents died. Both of them died, so the aunt raised the child, but was feeling such compassion that she wanted to always give the child whatever it wanted instead of disciplining it. So what happens, even we can see it generally speaking, if someone is raised in an opulent condition, they generally become debauched, that they take to a party style, lifestyle, and they get in trouble if they don't get out of that. So what happened to this fellow, his aunt gave him everything and never corrected him, felt sorry for him since he lost his parents, and he actually fell into bad association and he murdered someone, and they took him to court, and the judge says that you'll have to be executed. And he, do you have any requests? He says, yes, I would like to say something to my aunt who raised me so. So the aunt comes over and he says, I just want to say it very softly into your ear. So she put his ear very close to his mouth and he bit her ear off, which was quite shocking. And he said, because you never disciplined me, I always thought I was the enjoyer of everything, so I could do what I wanted. I was independent. So now I'm going to be executed. So when one understands that Krishna's whole plan is to bring us back home, he misses us. You know, that in this world, most of us that got old and had children, the children don't always stay in such close contact with the parents. But the parents, they don't forget the child. They're always wishing him well and would always like to have a nice relationship, but the world's not constituted exactly like that. We get our emotions because Krishna has these emotions. He loves us, he wants us back home, and we're in this dreamlike condition where we're suffering and he wants to wake us up. So either he comes personally or his representative comes, as we're reading about in all the different species of life, they come. And I'm going to finish reading text one now. So he's independent because there's no cause beyond him. It is he who only imparted Vedic knowledge into the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by illusory representation of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reaction of three modes of nature, appear factual, although they were unreal. So now we're getting the same idea that there's an illusion that we're in, and they appear real. They appear real, just like I'm always amazed, maybe because I eat kind of late, that I dream and I wake up in the middle of the dream and I'm always shocked how I was just one moment ago so convinced that this dream was real. I mean, I don't know if anybody else has that experience, but it's so relevant for me because this material life is also compared to that same type of situation. And when one wakes up from it, he looks back, just like when you look back on the dreams, maybe when you're still twilighting, just kind of waking up from it, and it's still, you're still emotionally involved in it, but it has no place anymore. So it says when one becomes Krishna conscious, he looks at his material life like a dream that he woke up from. So that same experience that you get when you wake up from a dream, you wake up in Krishna consciousness and you see this world the same way. And so even though sometimes, and it says then you can't hanker and lament anymore because you're understanding the nature of having your consciousness on the absolute platform. And on that platform, you perform your devotional service. That's the happiness that you're feeling. And I'll continue a little bit more. Here it says, three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existing in his transcendental abode, who is ever free from the illusory representation of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So you know the word they use for meditate, right? Is dhimahi. So this stage, this dhimahi, this is mentioned that this is for us. We're to, this is the introduction. So when we're listening to this Bhagavatam, which the next verse even clarifies the same point, because as you're pointing out before, Bonnie was telling me, that it's always clarification. Get the what you understand clearer and clearer. So the next verse, it says, completely rejecting all material, all religious activities which are materially motivated. So immediately it separates the materially motivated not to have contact with the material world. Even though the Vedas, they mainly deal with the three modes of nature, and there's the Karmakanda section, which took up a large section of it. This, because this is still the introductory verses, we see whole chapters, chapter 5, 6, 7, of the first canto. Narada Muni comes on the scene. He explains that the material suffering are superfluous to living beings. But the mass of people, they don't know this. So we should educate them, give them that information. How does one become educated? Simply by hearing 10.14.3, that regardless of your situation, where you're situated, dedicate your life to these narrations that are spoken by the liberated souls in disciplic succession, and then you'll become able, Krishna will be attracted to you. You'll be able to ajita jito. So I'll just finish this and then I'll stop there, because actually the whole second, the first chapter was questions to introduce the answers, and in chapter 2 basically is you need a spiritual master that gives you regulations, and the 1.3.44. I'll just read this one other verse because we're almost out of time. So this is right at the end of the third chapter, which is just now coming up, and it's the last verse there, but it's the same point, hearing, how to hear the Bhagavatam, and how to see Krishna. We see Krishna through our ears of hearing. So this verse, it said, text 44, O learned Brahmanas, when Sukadeva Goswami recited the Bhagavatam in the presence of Emperor Parikit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus, by his mercy, I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. I shall now try to make you hear the very same thing as I have learned it from him, and I have realized it. So, of course, realize it means the practical abhideya of devotional service, doing devotional service, having that vision. So the purport, this is an amazing purport, they all are, but this one is relevant here. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Wow. Okay, one cannot, bogus. The secret of learning the Bhagavatam, here's the secret of how to hear. the secret of, not that one can learn the Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text. One has to, Sukadeva said, hear from a representative. Okay, getting down to it. Simple hearing is not all. Oh, I just thought you said I could just hear it. That's all I had to do. Simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. The word Naivista means that Sukadeva Goswami drank the juice of the Bhagavatam through his ears. So we can drink through our ears. See, this is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret of knowing the Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who's not what? Pure in his mind. No one can be pure in his mind who's not pure in his action. No one can be pure in action who's not pure in his eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if one hears the Bhagavatam with rapt attention, from the very beginning, one will surely see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So, if we look at just a couple more verses, 262 and 263 explain the process of this material world, that you contemplate the senses because you're identified with the body and you're identified with being the enjoyer of the body, how Maya works. But then in 264, the alternative is given, which is what we're interested in. 264 says, but a person is free from attachment and aversion, so this is the Brahma Bhuta, and able to control his senses through the regulated principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. So that sounds good, to get the mercy of the Lord, and it's because 262 and 263 is that series of verses. If you contemplate the outer senses, you're going to develop attachment. And from that attachment, what happens? From such attachment, lust develops. I think I can enjoy this. I'm going to try. What happens? Oh, it didn't work. Anger arises. And from anger, complete delusion arises. From delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and one falls into the material pool. So then it says, but if you're able to come to this Brahma, at least like it mentioned, I read it from Majja 8:139, the Brahma Bhuta has two stages. So one Brahma Bhuta is still, the bodily activities are there, but you're regulating them by the regulated principles of freedom by following the principles that the spiritual master gave you. So he gives us no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. This covers the roots of our material life, or sinful activities. Prabhupada would say these are the columns, the pillars that sinful activities are built on. So then you can get the mercy. So what happens when you get the mercy? The next verse, what's the mercy look like? Who wants to know what that mercy looks like? Who would like this mercy? Let's skip the verse. That's also a really good one too. Okay, so it's 65. Oh. For one thus satisfied. So satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Where's the part of Brahma Bhuta that says that? Brahma Bhuta, what's the next word? Prasanatma. He's satisfied. So what does he not do? He doesn't lament and he doesn't hanker because he sees the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side. And he's enjoying Ashnute, the full blessings of immortality. 11. So Okay. He gets the mercy. So then the next verse. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, here it is, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such a satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon established. And just one more verse, since they're so nice. Here's the other part. Every time Krishna says something on one side, he always gives you the other side. One who's not, there you go, doing this, not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, can have neither transcendental intelligence, so that means he loses his perspective, intelligence is perspective, nor steady mind, without which there's no possibility of peace. And how can there be happiness without peace? So Krishna comes, does it so we can hear about his pastimes, it gives us something to talk, 10.9, Bodhiyantam Parasparam, they derives great satisfaction, always enlivening one another and just talking about me. So when you see a devotee, they're so rare, actually, not so much in this community, but you can talk about Krishna. You can, for those that aren't as fortunate, you give them the mercy. Here's Krishna in the form of Shrubda Brahma. You can hear about Krishna, speak about Krishna, remember Krishna, and do pure devotional service. Thank you very much. Glories of Prabhupada. Questions or comments? Correction. Chastising. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
I think this one.